interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Good Friday to you. And it is a Friday, April 19th edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, back live at Rufino's on the River on 1037 The Game. Ben Love with you here. Big show over the next 2.5 hours. As always, I'll be joined by my partner in crime, the famous Clint D, inside the 237 Roof Studios. You hear us say that all the time. Again, over the last 36 hours, it takes on some significance. Hail throughout a lot of Acadiana today in particular. I believe I saw the Kaplan area. So if you've been affected by any of that hail damage, you need a free estimate. Make sure you reach out to Lafayette Roofing. The number, 237-ROOF, 237-7663. We got a lot going on here at Rufino's on the River. I'll tell you about some of the specials. They're ready to help you on this Lenten weekend. But let's launch right into some LSU baseball talk. The news there, not good in a 24-hour news cycle. We'll talk Will Wade in the opening segment as well. The news, for LSU's head basketball coach. Okay, that is good from the FBI side. And now, maybe, you can eliminate one of the factors that could ping him and the basketball program. And then a decommitment for LSU football will lead touching all three bases. But starting with baseball, you know it was bad last night. 16-9, Gators batted around in a 6-run second inning. And Mikhail Hilliard not ready for the prime time in this moment, right? This time around. Elevated from a weekend starter, this is a kid who saved him so many times last year as a true freshman. Was arguably their best pitcher during the regular season, especially last night, wasn't his moment. And I think that Paul Maneri, I hate to say this, because if you listen to the show yesterday, Hunt Palmer joined us, and I think he put it delicately and perfectly that this has been nothing short of a disastrous season for Paul Maneri. Not with the record, 24-15, 9-7. They're not lighting the world on fire, but that's not a disaster. But in his personal life, right, with his father passing away, there's a new AD that's coming in. I know one of those things is so much more significant to him than the other. But point being, between those things and all the injuries, it's been a tough go for Maneri, and it's got to be a taxing go on him. And so when I say this, I try to keep everything that I just positioned to you in mind. It's almost as if he wanted LSU Nation to know, almost as if he took a little bit of, I would almost say, perverse pleasure in telling you after the game, if Zach Hess started tonight and was pretty healthy, I'm confident we wouldn't have seen this type of game. And so in a moment that even Maneri admitted, hey, we don't have many of these. My 13 years here, there have only been a handful of these, in particular at home. For him to use that moment to tweak you a little bit, let you know, hey, everybody that thinks Hess belongs at the back end of the bullpen, remember tonight, next time that you go down that road. And certainly it was ugly for Mikhail Hilliard, but it wasn't just him. Clay Moffitt struggled as well. LSU went down 13-0. Felt like a football game at a certain point. They did have some offensive firepower. Eventually, Cade Beloso drove in 3 runs. Former Lafayette High Mighty Lion, Antoine Duplantis with 4 hits as he continues to climb that chart. But just an ugly opener when everybody saw that Florida was down. Here's an opportunity to pounce. And after an injury-riddled loss in Metairie to the Raging Cajuns, LSU now has lost 2 in a row, and they could use one tonight. You want to get in on the conversation? We got some time. 706-0111. Tonight it's going to be Cole Henry for LSU. And kind of like Hilliard last year, they need a freshman to lead them. And they're going to have to count on that. And they certainly don't want to play a game where they have to score in double digits to win like last night. Moving on to Will Wade, your big news of the day. Federal Judge Edgardo Ramos has ruled that LSU head coach Will Wade, Arizona head coach Sean Miller, they won't have to testify in the upcoming college basketball federal trial that begins Monday, the 22nd. But Ramos did say he reserves the right to change his mind mid-trial. Yes, this is good for LSU and Wade. You better believe it's good for Miller and Arizona as well. And the basis, according to Ramos, he declared today, the question of if they paid players is quote-unquote irrelevant to bribery charges against former Hoops consultants Christian Dawkins and Merle Code. And almost certainly the representation of Dawkins and Code, these are the guys, right, that fed everything to Pat Forty and company, Pete Thamel, that they needed for some of the inflammatory reports that have come out. What I will still caution you on, this is good news. It's another brick in a rebuilt wall that could keep Wade at LSU, but it's not a done deal yet. It looks a lot better from the FBI side, and certainly today was nothing but great news on that front. But the thought process for me, and I've shared this with you for, it feels like 6 weeks, seven, 8 weeks maybe at this point, is the idea that what was said at a federal trial, what was aired in terms of tapes at a federal trial, would then be admissible for the NC2A. And so removing the FBI trial from the equation does nothing but help Wade and LSU. I'll be the first to tell you that. Can't come to any different conclusion. But the NCAA has still already been on campus, and they will be moving forward. There's also a new AD. That's not good for any sitting head coach on campus. It doesn't mean that everyone's getting let go. I think there are certain coaches that you would imagine are beyond reproach. And boy, you would think that D.D. Bro, and how about that? The LSU gymnastics team will compete for the national championship against UCLA tomorrow. Amazing. But I would think that D.D. Bro, I would think that Beth Tarina, there's a number of coaches that are probably beyond reproach because of their performance, and you might even add their salary level. Paul Maneri is a guy who probably would stay as long as he wants to, I would think. But from Ed Ogeron, kind of, sort of, and then definitely both the basketball coaches, I think a new sheriff in town is AD. There's just always the lingering possibility that they'll want to cook with their own ingredients, and either you're not winning enough, not earning the salary, or in terms of Wade, it may be that they don't want to deal with the mess in the dark cloud. And a number of reports, or I should say stories, reporters that have caught up with Scott Woodward in the last 36 hours, he continues to say one thing, reminding me of Larry Brown, old NBA coach, college basketball coach. He said, we're going to win and we're going to do it the right way. I'm going to try not to read into that too much and how that could pertain to Will Wade. But today is good news for Wade and for those at LSU that want to keep him around. Could something happen later with the NCAA? It's possible, but that was always going to be something that took a little bit longer. That's an organization that's had an awful hard time sinking their teeth into things, even when they have proof. So today, the news not good for LSU baseball, but they got a chance to turn it around tonight at 7 o'clock. As far as LSU basketball is concerned, I think today was a shot in the arm. And we expected the reinstatement. We expected that this could happen, not having to testify at the federal trial. These are all things that over the last week or two became clear, hey, they're probably going to happen. Well, suddenly the dominoes look like they're starting to fall in a positive direction. We'll see how that goes moving forward, but at least that's the way the wind's blowing today. Finally, before we hit our first break, California outside linebacker Jaden Navarette committed to LSU during the spring game. That was not long ago. He flipped today to the Oregon Ducks. And so there were a number of people wondering if LSU star cornerback commit from the state of California, one of the top two corners in the country, a lot of rumblings, could he end up going to USC? Is there a flip coming there? Nothing budging there, and that's great news for LSU fans. But the outside linebacker from the left coast who committed within the last 2 weeks, well, that's been undone. He is now committed to the Oregon Ducks. Not sure that's going to have a huge impact on the recruiting class in 2020, but they want to keep stocking up as far as the second level of the defense and some of the edge rushers. All right, big program today. We're with you until 6:30. That's when you get the pregame show. Doug Thompson, Chris Blair for LSU, Florida, Purdue. On our program today, from 4:30 to 5 o'clock, double dose of Ruff and Rodriguez. We'll talk everything going on with Scott Woodward, gauge his relationship with LSU's new AD, and then just what he thinks about LSU's spring game and what the football program needs to do moving forward. So Ruffin joins us here within the next 15 to 20 minutes at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. We're taking you to Alec Box Stadium. James Moran, editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, takes you to the on-deck circle from 5:30 to 6. Blaine Viator will sit in live with me, co-host of the producers and a guy that spent a lot of time around prep football. We'll talk a little bit of that, previewing, very early preview of the 2019 Acadiana area football season. And then at 6 o'clock, a Q&A replay with Mike Dettillier. And speaking of NFL draft picks, I'm going to turn you into one on the other side of this break. Our sink or swim question, it addresses the Saints and the draft that begins next Thursday. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back out to Ruffino's on the River on this beautiful Good Friday on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Back for break and right back inside Ruffino's on the River. Perfect place tonight, this weekend, and this time of year with the weather to celebrate life. You're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Speaking of the perfect place to be tonight, have pretty good intel that we're going to have a good crowd here in the bar area, and they're accommodating you. Doesn't matter what your plans are later tonight, you can come start with us. They've got the Angry Calamari. It is an Asian-inspired taste of calamari. You're going to enjoy it. Come in. Perfect for everybody observing Lent. Come over to Ruffino's and whoever. Join us and start your weekend the right way, especially if you've been off all day. You got no excuse. Stop out at 921 Camellia Drive. All right, we're going to go down the road of Saints and the NFL draft here in a moment, but there are a few things that have popped up today that are worth sharing first, and one might involve a Louisiana native. A lot of reports that Daniel Jones, Duke quarterback, is the apple of the Giants' eye in New York. And so is time up on Eli? Or is it kind of like when Eli first got to the league and he went where Kurt Warner was and eventually he pushed Kurt out? So is there a chance that Daniel Jones ends up with the New York Giants and plays right away? Is there a chance he comes in and has to mentor or serve under Eli as his mentor for a little while? That could be intriguing, but the report that's out there is that the Giants have Daniel Jones as their top overall quarterback. So not the cat from Ohio State, not the guy everybody assumes is going first overall to the Arizona Cardinals, Heisman winner Kyler Murray, but Daniel Jones out of Duke, number one on at least one team's big board of quarterbacks. Intriguing. I wonder how that throws a monkey wrench in things. And this other storyline I'm just going to tease. You can imagine it'll fit perfectly during a segment in our 5 o'clock hour. But John Gruden, his GM, Mike Mayock, who used to watch on TV analyzing these things, now he's got to make the picks. And he's got three first-round picks for the Oakland, soon-to-be Vegas Raiders. And there is some discord on the Bay, to say the least. They've sent some people home. Not sure they'll be invited back in the scouting department. More on that again later in the program. That's everybody else's stuff, their mess, their headspace when it comes to the NFL draft. On the other side of the music, I'll ask you about the Saints and what you think they should do.
Love, exciting and
your sink or swim question of the day. Should the Saints trade up in the draft? We know it starts next Thursday. If things stand as they are, Saints won't be involved on Thursday night. And they'd only be involved once a week from tonight on Friday. It's the second and third round on night two in Nashville. And as things stand right now, the Saints have one second round pick toward the tail end of that round, 62nd overall. They've got two picks in the fifth round, one in the sixth, and two in the seventh. And so, yes, of the Saints, six overall picks, five come in the fifth round or later. And so today, what I'm asking you is, should they trade up in the draft? And I've left that a bit ambiguous for a reason. Call us up. Let us know what you think. 706-0111. CD, you got honors.
I'm going to go ahead and go with the Saints. They shouldn't trade up in the draft because I feel like they've done that in the past. They've done it a little too much. And I feel like what you have in place right now, you don't necessarily have to add a whole lot of true talent to it like you would in previous years, as we've seen whenever they were 7-9. I think you're okay with handling things the way that you've done in the past. Get some added depth to this roster because I think the 2020 draft class is where you're going to want to make your hay with some first-round picks down the line. I think that's going to be whenever you need to start building for the future as opposed to what I've seen like with this team right here, right now. The draft has to be revolving around adding depth in with those later picks.
I disagree with you, but maybe not in a way that you or many would expect. I am going to swim here, brother. I think they should trade up, but not from the second round into the first, or not from the second round higher up in that round. I think they should use whatever they got, ammunition for those final five picks, maybe even a piece on their roster that they're not particularly fond of. They don't like the contract. They don't think the person will be more than an occasional contributor. If they could find a way to keep the second and then get into the third and forego some of the later round trash that's not going to really turn into much. I know occasionally that you could turn over a Marcus Colston. I get that it happens, but I do think that they are in an absolutely just bullish mode where it's all hands on deck, all in to win this year. Now, you try not to mortgage the future, but how much are you mortgaging if you have to give up, say, three of those five latter round picks and then maybe somebody in your secondary who you're not overly fond of, somebody in the receiving core that you just don't think is going to stick? I'll just be honest with you. I know there are some people that believe Cam Meredith can come around, but boy, if I could get value out of Cam Meredith and let's just say one of the fifths and the sixth, if I can give up Cam Meredith, a fifth and a sixth, and I'm picking in the third round, just tell me where to sign up for that deal. Now, again, logistically, I don't know if that works. I'm throwing it out there for the sake of conversation. What I'm telling you is I would love to see the Saints pick twice a week from tonight. That is what I want. And so I think many would read into the question as, okay, you wanted to trade up into the first round, those stakes are too high. You have to give up future first-rounders. You have to give up bona fide starters for your team. I'm not suggesting they do any of that. I just want to see them bolster what they have on Friday night, which currently is just the 62nd overall pick. So if they find a way to draft twice on Friday night, I think that maximizes their chances of getting an interior defensive lineman who's in the rotation, and until Sheldon Rankins comes back, he'll help you inside, just like the guy they went and got from the New England Patriots. But they're going to need more bodies, for example, there. They're going to need probably another member of the secondary who could come in and play right away. And so last year, I believe it was who? Natrell Jamerson came in from Wisconsin. If memory serves, maybe a fifth-round pick. It's just too late to expect yourself to hit. It's not nearly as unlikely if you're in the late second round or the third round. Think Mike Thomas. Think Alvin Kamara. I mean, there have been so many players they've gotten in that range that they get really good value on because you could still get a stud in a top 90 overall pick. I've got my doubts once you start talking 168, which is where their second overall pick would be in this draft in the fifth round. I've got my doubts on 168 and later. So, CD, once I put it in those terms, you want to take a nibble or you still feel good?
I still feel good with what you got, but again, like I was just thinking about the question initially towards the first round. I'm not against trading it because I feel like they probably are going to wind up doing that because that seems to be the trend of what I've seen the Saints do in the past, but I'm still going to stick with what I got right now.
All right, I like it. A man who's confident. He's seen his hand at the card table. He doesn't want a deal. What about you? What's your deal on this Good Friday? What do you want the Saints to do starting a week from yesterday? We got some time here. 706-0111. Don't forget, on the other side of this break, Ruff and Rodri going to join the program. We should have a full 30 minutes to talk a very busy political week for LSU athletics. So excited to bring Ruff and Rodri aboard. And, hey, look, He's good enough to bring us aboard to Rufino's on the River. He's carved out this great area in the bar for us to come and set up shop. We've been having a great time. This is week two of our weekly hits at Rufino's on the River. We're going to keep them rolling. And the great news is, beginning next Friday, I get to start telling you about some of the meat specials as well. Wasn't going to throw that in your face. I know not everybody listening is Catholic, but those that are, hey, we don't want to make your mouth water when it's not a road you're going to go down. But starting next Friday, it's a bit of a different story. So we'll make sure we paint the full picture for you. All right, Clint and I are in so far. He's not trading up if he's the Saints in this draft. I am if I can get a second pick on Friday night, because I think those are guys that stand the chance to play for your team in 2019. All you're doing, in my opinion, with the glutton of picks that they've got between 168 and 244 overall, all you're doing there is wishing, praying, and hoping that you've got somebody that maybe in 2020 or later could play for you. You want an example? I'll submit Will Clapp. He was a player last year that was taken in this range. Played because of just a rash of injuries, spot duty in 2018 as a rookie, and now he's got a chance to play this year with some seasoning. That's the type of guy you're going after. And I'm not saying that you don't need those guys. You do. You have to draft for now and for the future every single year. I know that. But, boy, I think they're awfully close to winning it all this year. So one more contributor in 2019 would sit very well with me. All right, we're halfway home in hour number one, half hour Ruff and Rodrigue on the other side. You're used to hearing him Mondays at 5:15. We moved him to Fridays, and he's going to move you the right way heading into your weekend. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back out to Rufino's on the River on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
The perfect music to cue us right back in to Rufino's on the River. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Glad to have you as we take you home and into an Easter weekend on 103.7 The Game, doing our best to bring Ruff and Rodrigue aboard. Should have him sooner than later. What I do know is this. This is our second straight week we've been out here. The biggest Penn State fan in the Acadiana area is in the building. He said he's not going to be alone. We got some other folks that are coming as well. We encourage you to come out and join us, whether you are or not eating meat tonight. We understand some of those restrictions. They got exactly what you need, some of the best fish that you've had anywhere in this market. And you come sit at the bar area, and look, it's really easy, it's really affordable, and it's really fun. You come, eat the angry calamari, and you're going to enjoy it. Asian-infused calamari. The way they do it here, it's spectacular. My wife came by last Friday. We had some. So stop by if you get a chance. Rufino's on the River, 921 Camellia, and celebrate a little bit of life. I do not forget, we got James Moran joining us at straight up 5 o'clock. I'm knocking on wood. I got some right behind me here on the wall. Hopefully we'll have Ruff and Rodrigue momentarily. And I do want to get right into LSU moving away from Joe Oliva and bringing aboard Scott Woodward. And the more stories that continue to come out, not so much on how this happened. I think we all have a pretty clear idea of what's going on here, right? I think a lot of the power brokers, I keep using the name Richard Lipsey. Many of you understand his importance financially, just as a power player for LSU and in this state. The Will Wade situation at large gave an opportunity for some of those people to get Oliva out, whereas for whatever reason, politically, they were having a hard time getting the full agreement of the Board of Supervisors to do that. Well, now they got their man out that they wanted. I would think that F. King Alexander is next on the list. But part of the wheels turning is they got to bring in the guy that they wanted, right? Who's from Baton Rouge, who has worked at LSU before, who's quite literally been in politics. in the capital city of Louisiana before. So, you know, I've talked for a while about will they allow him to do his job and get out of his way, and I've been given a resounding yes answer there. The other thing that I feel like it bears some mention here, and this is important, he knows exactly how the landscape works here. He's been a part of the tapestry. And so he knows not only how it works, but he knows specifically who these people are. There will be no awkward transition, right? There will be no need of introduction where one person kind of doubts some of the goals, aspirations, and tactics of the other. You're not going to have to go through that when Scott Woodward comes in. He knows the culture. He knows the people. He knows the system. But as I mentioned during the opening segment, a lot of the interviews he's done, the phrase has come up, we're going to win, and we're going to do it in the right way. And so I'm doing my best not to make an immediate – look, you've seen the movie Office Space. He has the jump to conclusions, Matt. I'm trying not to stand on one end of the mat and jump to the other and connect dots that maybe don't need to be connected. I don't think that's necessarily a statement about Wade. That would be a little presumptuous. But I do think he's going to come in and have the welfare of LSU's athletic department as the utmost concern, and he absolutely should. And so I'm encouraged by everything that continues to happen. The news today on the Wade front would seem to exonerate you a little bit from the FBI level. The NC2A part, I would feel pretty confident in telling you, is not done yet. We'll see what happens, but you don't fear the NCAA as much as you do the FBI. I think all of us can agree upon that. So a lot of big things happening in that direction, but probably the biggest of them all short term, and in terms of accomplishment within a specific sport, congratulations to Dede Brough and LSU Gymnastics. I do not proclaim to be fluent or proficient in how all of these things work once they get to the national tournament, but what I have gathered and what I will submit to you is this. They finished second in a point system today at the national tournament. Top two move on, face each other in what basically amounts to a national championship match. LSU finished second to UCLA by just a fraction of a point, but it's going to be the Bruins, the Tigers, going at it tomorrow for the 2019 Gymnastics National Championship. And how cool is that? So I had to make sure that we got them their just due and their love on the program today. All right, I'm going to make an executive decision here, CD. Let's land this plane momentarily, take a little time in the break. Get Ruffin on. I want to spend some time with him today. I've been looking forward to his opinion all week long. I know a lot of listeners have been as well. So stick with us. Bumper to Bumper Sports coming right back out to Ruffino's on the river. Look forward to bringing Ruffin on with us on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
All right, the show will roll on. Quite literally, we're right back out to Ruffino's on the river. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. An interesting note, and if we do get Ruffin Roderick, trust me, you'll be the first to hear from him. The thing I saw today that kind of grabbed me with college baseball, outside of just LSU versus Florida, and it's been ongoing for a while, there's been a movement, and it turned into a proposal for a third paid assistant in college baseball. About 11:30 this morning, Kendall Rogers, D1 Baseball Managing Editor, lets the world know that that proposal has failed. And boy, is that being received poorly. I mean, kind of lead balloon style. There are former college players that are in the major leagues chirping in on this one. You've got college ADs. You've got college coaches that are giving their two cents, and nobody's happy. So it kind of makes you wonder, well, who exactly was doing all of that voting. Nonetheless, if you want another paid assistant inside of a college dugout, you're going to have to wait at least another calendar year. But that's something that I mean, consider the scholarship limitations, right? If I'm not mistaken, 11.7. I think that's literally how many scholarships you get to divide up when it comes to baseball. And so in a state like Louisiana, I mean, you've just been hoping and praying that you get to keep tops for as long as you can so that the in-state kids that have the grades don't chip away at your 11.7. And so already dealing with scholarship limitations, now you can't beef up your staff. And I know that a lot of people think LSU baseball is second in command in Baton Rouge. You could even say at a place like UL, hey, it's second in command. Understand one thing. There are two revenue-generating sports on basically every campus, and it's football and men's basketball. Really doesn't even particularly matter if the men's basketball program is down. Now, it can eventually get to the point where that cripples you if it's down and it stays down, but there are two, football and men's basketball. On LSU's campus, as contrary as it may seem to some of you, because you go to the box and you see, what, 10, 11, sometimes 12,000 people out there. You go to the PMAC and you're lucky if you see, depends on the year, right? 4, 6, 8, this year, 10, 11, 12,000 people. The numbers are just different. But there's a reason in basketball that they've got three paid full-time assistants. And that the head coach in basketball makes more than the head coach in baseball. There's a reason they've got 13 scholarship players, revenue generating. And it's a shame, especially in Louisiana and in the Deep South. You think about the level of popularity of college baseball and how much of a part of the athletic fabric that UL baseball, LSU baseball is. If I wanted to, I could extend the exact same argument to softball. You think about how just huge they are in our culture. It's just not treated that way financially. And today was another reminder of that and another kind of just shameful response from the people voting on this that it just wasn't worth the money. It wasn't going to come back, this investment. Otherwise, I'm sure they would have made it. So, look, we got a lot going on, obviously. LSU Florida baseball, UL, about to play game two tonight at Sunbelt Conference leader UT Arlington. So we've got our own local matters to discuss when it's pertaining to college baseball. We've got LSU Will Wade. We've got LSU football losing out on a commit. We've got the Saints nearing the NFL draft. And I really haven't scratched the surface of the NBA playoffs so far since they began about a week ago. And the most interesting storyline is Kevin Durant. And I want to share some of that as we throw shade in the 5 o'clock hour. And Kevin, I think, kind of subliminally threw some at the media and then went out and just busted the Clippers' backside last night. Unbelievably efficient, but the idea that Kevin Durant would look right into a camera, and I've seen the extended clip, so you can't take it out of context. I'd encourage you to watch the whole 2.5 minutes, whatever it is, not just the one part where basically it's like, I'm Kevin Durant, you know who I am. But even if you do isolate that, that's a bad man. I mean, that is a bad, bad man. And no, Patrick Beverley can't stop him. He may be able to get under his skin, get inside of his head from time to time, but he can't stop him. But really just incredible and hilarious what's going on in that Warriors-Clippers series. But it's tip of the iceberg stuff for everybody so far. You got a best of seven in every single round. It's going to take that many games for everybody to survive, advance, and get through. But it's been funny to watch what's going on with Kevin Durant there. Otherwise, I look at these playoffs so far, and Ben Simmons has been an oddly large figure, not just locally, but nationwide. And the idea that he's a poor shooter from the outside, from the free throw line, well, that's not an idea. That's a fact. Almost a comically bad shooter for both of those two levels. However, he put up a monstrous stat line last night. Just incredible what Ben Simmons did. So you've got two of the most athletically gifted players in the NBA, both at the center of some form of criticism. Durant, to me, should be much, much further beyond reproach than Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons deserves a lot of the blame, a lot of the criticism that's being lobbed at him. And not long ago this week, I believe it was Colin Coward that said Ben Simmons is the most overrated player in the NBA. I understand how a case can be made for that. He's one of the least well-rounded players in the NBA, to be certain. Athletically, a freak. He belonged at this level when he was 17 years old. It's the reason that he, by and large, slept off his time through LSU. But when it comes to Durant, the interesting thing is now you get some of these same people like a Colin Cowherd that say he's the best player on the planet. And that there's a fairly narrow gap, but there is a gap, I believe Cowherd said, between Durant at one and LBJ at two. Then there's a huge gap between everybody else. So I don't know that I'm drinking that Kool-Aid just yet. I don't know that I'm ready to drink the Kool-Aid that Kevin Durant is the best player on planet Earth and far and away holds that title. What I will recognize is that he was excellent when he wasn't on one of these super teams in Oklahoma City. And for the most part, he's excellent doing what he's doing right now on the Bay for the Golden State Warriors. But that deck is stacked. And maybe they don't stay that way after this season. Maybe Durant does go to New York and starts a different big grouping. Could be that you see another guy try his hand elsewhere in Klay Thompson. We'll see. But the NBA playoffs so far, probably a little bit more centered on those two central figures. And then also, I would say, the Houston Rockets. The way that they have dusted off the opposition two games in so far, it has led to Mike D'Antoni puffing his chest out somewhat. We're as good as anybody in the league, if not better. I will tell you that he should feel that way. I will tell you that he's also not right. But I got no problem with him feeling that way. You get to that level, it's one of those things that I think you kind of have to embody, at least just a little bit. Another update I can give you, we wondered aloud on yesterday's program who Texas A&M would go after as their athletic director. And we've got an answer now, but I don't know that it's long-term. But I think short-term, it's a dynamite one for the Aggies. And R.C. Slocum is a name that will ring out to a lot of people in Louisiana and throughout the Deep South. A Hall of Famer. R.C. Slocum has been named the interim AD for the Texas A&M Aggies. How long will he stay in that role? We'll see. But as I suggested yesterday, with the money, the facilities, the endowment and ability to grow, I mean, look at what they're doing right now. Just flashing cash at people like Buzz Williams and Jimbo Fisher, going out and getting some of the best assistants in the country. Wanted to pay $2 million to Dave Aranda and got us into the situation that we're witnessing now. I still believe they're going to go after a very big fish. And I would imagine they have a chance of getting him or her, whoever their person is. Whoever their version of Scott Woodward is, they'll be able to get him just with the funds. But to bridge the gap, and again, most institutions, most universities work to where they have their fiscal calendar year that usually ends at the end of June. And so what that tells me, an uneducated guess from, I don't know, how far are we from College Station? Like 350 miles away? Uneducated guess would say that they probably make a different hire and that Slocum is bridging the gap for about 2.5 months. If he's needed past that, my guess is it won't be too much further past that. I would think by next football season that they've got somebody else in charge. But as they lost Scott Woodward, the Aggies did not wait long in finding their replacement. The other thing that tells you, even though it's kind of a temporary stopgap, the other thing that suggests is that they knew this was coming with Woodward, or at least they knew that it could be coming sooner than later. So this feels like it was a secret that was at least somewhat well kept on the LSU side. And again, they have been in the secret keeping business a lot more efficiently than they used to. Good for them. But A&M has moved on, at least in the interim. So we'll have plenty of time to discuss that and more on the other side of our upcoming hour break. We're hanging out at Ruffino's on the River, and look at this. We have people at the bar that have come to check out the show, and already they've got a pizza that's been delivered. I can tell you that they've got the Angry Calamari here. It's Asian-infused calamari. It's perfect for those that are looking for a Lenten menu on a Good Friday. But you come in here, doesn't matter if you're eating meat tonight or not, you're going to leave happy. You're going to leave with a full stomach if you want to. If not, just come Have a drink with us. Get ready for the Easter weekend. Maybe you've been off all day. We'd love to have you here tonight, and then you can go along your merry way. But trust me, you're going to celebrate life and have a lot more fun and be happy that you came through. Rapinos on the River, 921 Camellia Boulevard. All right, CD, we missed our guy Ruffin. That's okay. We'll have every Friday moving forward to run it back with them. But we do have to cap off hour number one with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Irrelevant. And what an interesting choice of word that is. I'll reiterate. Federal Judge Edgardo Ramos has ruled that Will Wade, Sean Miller, they're not going to have to testify in the upcoming Hoops federal trial. He did say he reserves the right to change his mind mid-trial, but he used the word irrelevant. And his basis in saying these guys don't have to testify, he said the question of if they paid players is irrelevant to bribery charges against Christian Dawkins and Merle Code. And so I don't think you should interpret that as, hey, it's irrelevant if they are cheating or not. No, it's not. It's very relevant. And it still could be to the NCAA, but how interesting that this is seen as a separate issue from the big trial at hand. But use that word as a reference point, because we'll be coming back to it, because it is irrelevant there as it's been deemed so far. It means that Wade won't be in the potential line of fire, even as a material witness for the FBI. But some of the things on a wiretap, the strong-ass offer, are those items going to remain irrelevant for all of time, for the next 6 months, for the next year? I'm just not sure yet. But irrelevant, an interesting choice of words there from Edgardo Ramos. And it's the final word of hour number one, brought to you by our friends at the Village Station. Because they're your final stop to fill up your stomach and tank when you head home on Maurice Avenue. We'll be right back in. Knock on wood, James Moran scheduled to join us. We're talking LSU Florida baseball. It's Bumper.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
It's time to get you ready for LSU baseball. Step into the on-deck circle with James Moran on 1037 The Game.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. Bumper to Bumper Sports back out at Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here at the best place to celebrate life in Acadiana. The famous Clint D joins us from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And you heard the man who introed the hour. It is time for James Moran. He's the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, and he's ready to take you to the on-deck circle live from Alec Box Stadium. How are you, James?
Doing well, Ben. How about yourself?
Look, I'm doing very well. I'll ask you this, and it's not about the weather. Is the sky falling in Baton Rouge when it comes to LSU baseball? I know last night was ugly, but what's the outlook for tonight?
Weather, I think it's going to be fine. It was just downpouring a couple minutes ago, but it looks like it's just little storms coming through, and everything should be cleared out by 6. Obviously, first pitch until 7, so I don't think it's going to be like last night where they have to move the game back. And as far as the game itself yesterday, I honestly just think that's more of a product of when you go into a series opener without your ace, without your horse, it really kind of puts the whole team in a bind. I mean, Mikhail Hilliard, I guess, is a pretty capable guy to step in, but once he got off to a bad start and Florida really hammered him in that second inning, then your hands are kind of tied. I mean, you don't want to use your go-to guys, especially when you have a shorthand staff like LSU does, in a game like that because you may never come back. So I know they scored some runs late, but really last night was all about the pitching. I mean, you get down in a 6-0 hole on a Friday or a first game of an SEC series, your chances of coming back in that game are about 1 in 100. So once they started bringing in kind of the bottom of the bullpen guys, I think that's really when it got out of hand and got ugly in a hurry. I They haven't been playing very good baseball of late, obviously. They've lost four in a row, five of their last six. But momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. So if Cole Henry goes out there today and is a lot better, then they could really look like an entire a different team entirely. So I think really it's a lot of pressure on the freshmen. I mean, if they go ahead and lose the first two games of this series and they're staring at a sweep, I mean, that's going to be tough, especially at home against the Florida team that came in with their own issues. But I don't think it's panic time yet now.
James, I feel quite certain that neither Paul Maneri nor Alan Dunn needs fan validation, but what do you make out of the post-game comment from Paul last night? I know you were there, but he said if Zach Hess, who has dealt with a groin injury, started tonight and was pretty healthy, I'm pretty confident we wouldn't have seen this type of game. Was that not so subtly letting the fan base know, hey, we got a Friday night starter and don't doubt that?
No, I don't think so. I think he was just answering the question. I mean, he talked about that they haven't had many games like that in an SEC opener. And, you know, look, they haven't. I mean, you know, Zach Hess, I mean, you can – I mean, I wrote it – I kind of wrote it that way that you're alluding to, and I kind of made that point because I think, you know, we get so many questions about if Zach Hess should be put in the bullpen or is he really a starter, much less a Friday night starter. Well, you kind of got a look of what it looks like when you don't have him on a Friday night. And, you know, it was pretty ugly. I mean – it was 6-0 probably before most people settled in to even watch the game. I mean, it got out of hand. It was 10-0 by the time the middle of the fifth inning rolled around. So, look, Hess is probably healthy enough to pitch an inning or two in relief. He could have pitched last night. It was a competitive game. Obviously, it wasn't. So, if LSU has a tight game tonight or tomorrow, I would fully expect to see him. It was just a matter of they didn't think he could extend with that groin injury because as he got fatigued, you know, if he goes 4, 5, 6 innings, you're a lot more likely to pull something or re-injure something. And that obviously is something LSU wants to avoid because if they have to go an extended period of time without Zach Hess, that's going to be a big problem.
James Moran, the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, joining us on 103.7 The Game. You mentioned Cole Henry. He's got a chance to change the entire narrative tonight. Based on his recent form, the way he's been going, what are some of your expectations for the freshman from Alabama?
I mean, I expect him to pitch well. I mean, he was kind of in a similar situation a few weeks ago against Texas A&M. Now, he was pitching the third game of the series and the second game of a doubleheader that day, not the middle game. But LSU was coming off an ugly loss where it made a whole bunch of errors and, you know, had a comeback bid where they probably should have tied the game and kind of blew it in the ninth inning. And then he went out there and he got off to a rough start. I mean, there was some bad defense behind him. He hit a guy and there were two runs on the board before you could even blink, but then he didn't give up anything, and he was just kind of magnificent over eight innings. I mean, he's really answered the bell whenever they've needed him to. So, look, I mean, that doesn't always mean a guy's going to pitch well. Anybody can have an off night, but my expectations are he goes out there and gives them a quality start tonight and gives them a chance to win. Jack Leftwich, Florida's pitcher, hasn't really been lights out this year, though. Tommy Mace wasn't lights out going in the last line, and he cruised through seven innings pretty easily. But I think that was more a matter of the score. I would think that on its face, the pitching matchup favors LSU for whatever that's really worth.
Cade Beloso with a huge home run in Metairie in the midweek. He drove in three runs last night. I mean, just how locked in has that freshman been, and how much can they continue to rely on that power source moving forward?
Well, I think they're going to need to because right now he seems like he's the only guy that's really locked in. I mean, he's you know, he wasn't even an everyday player at the beginning of the year, but now you look at him and he's only two RBIs away from tying the team lead. He's driven in 35 runs and I think 35 games. So he's been really good from a run production standpoint. I mean, look, his at-bats don't always look great. He can get overmatched against some lefties, but LSU, I don't think he's going to see many lefties in this series. So that's not really much of a concern. But, you know, Daniel Cabrera hasn't really been hitting since he came back. I'm not sure if he's 100% healthy. Obviously, Zach Watson and Chris Reed aren't 100% healthy. Josh Smith's still been playing fine. He's been obviously LSU's steadiest player all year. And Antoine Duplantis was probably the brightest spot last night. He had those four hits. Looked like he was coming out of it maybe a little bit after some recent struggles. But Beloso has been steady, and he's been really good of late. I think they're going to need to keep relying on him to be, you know, we know the four, and he had in Reed five guys that LSU kind of counts on a day-to-day basis. Beloso has probably been their best player outside of that group, at least offensively. And I think they're going to continue to need him to produce runs. And if he can kind of stay on this hot streak that he's been on this week, that would obviously be a very good thing.
James, we are 3 weeks into April. It's a little early to start prognosticating about the postseason, but as far as their current arc, you know what I mean, their trajectory, what would you say about LSU's chances of hosting one round, the second round, you know, all those things getting into postseason play?
Well, when you looked at the projections when they came out last week, obviously a lot of outlets do them here at before the halfway court of SEC play, which LSU was at before last night. And every one of them had LSU hosting a regional. Now, LSU is going to have some work to do if they want to be a national seed and ensure themselves they're at home throughout the NCAA tournament, throughout the road to Omaha. But that's kind of what I mean by, like, you know, it seems like there's a lot of people that are, you know, kind of panicked about this team or that this team isn't any good. But it seems like this is about where they are every year at this time. Now, they were a little bit worse shape last year, but I'd also argue last year's team was not as talented as most of them, especially from a pitching standpoint. LSU, I think, still has all of their goals in front of them. They still have all of it within reach. I mean, they're a game and a half out of first place in the West. I think there may be another game out of first place, another game behind that in terms of the SEC overall. I'm pretty sure Georgia's still in first place in the league overall. But, you know, they still have – that's really why turning things around this weekend is important. I mean, they hit the halfway point and still had three home series versus two road series in front of them. You don't really want to lose your home series. That makes it tough.
Finishing up with James Moran, the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, and he joins us live from Alec Box Stadium. I mentioned earlier on the show, James, the report today that the third paid college baseball assistant proposal failed. Put that in LSU terms for our listeners. What's the significance of that? Who's the type of assistant that could affect? And then in general, how does that hamstring this sport?
Well, I mean, the Pollinari, the whole SEC really was unanimously behind it. I mean, I think that the SEC has been kind of a leading – I know they're the ones that originally proposed the new rule, and obviously they're the league that spends the most on college baseball. So they were pushing it hard. They really wanted it to pass. It didn't. What it means is that LSU is going to have to keep making the same choices it's been making the last few years, which is, you know, obviously you have to have a pitching coach. I don't think there's any school out there that's not going to have a full-time pitching coach that's paid. That would just kind of be crazy unless your head coach. Maybe if your head coach is specifically a pitching coach, but other than that, that would be borderline reckless. So LSU, you know, at first they had the hitting coach and the recruiting coordinator. That's what Javi Sanchez was. That's what Andy Canizero was. Recent years they've gone with the split duties where the recruiting coordinator, Nolan Kane, is full-time and the hitting coach is the volunteer assistant. But basically how it affects LSU is if this passed, either A, they would keep Sean Ochinco or Mikey Gibbs or whoever, and they would get paid and they would have a full-time job, which would be ideal because they are essentially performing a full-time job, though they're not being compensated for doing so, really. Or if they wanted to, they'd go out and hire someone as a hitting coach. I mean, people always, you know, the hitting coach thing is talked about so much, it gets rather annoying to answer the same questions over and over again. But, you know, you can't really attract a veteran hitting coach or an experienced hitting coach, which, for the record, I think is kind of overrated. I don't know how much a hitting coach really affects things. I mean, I think it's just one of those easy things that people turn to whenever things are going wrong, that they could use a better hitting coach, which, I mean, you know, it couldn't hurt. But, you know, it really kind of keeps them from being able to pursue one or to really lock up the guys they do have, because you can't really offer them a full-time job. I mean, they make their money off of basically camps in the off season, and that's really it, which is a tough way to go about things, especially if you want to, you know, attract a more veteran guy or a more polished name like so many LSU fans seem to want them to do.
We'll see if they turn it around tonight. Tigers and Gators, 7 o'clock first pitch, and we're bringing you to the pregame show at 6:30. You've been listening to James Moran. James, thanks for taking the time. We'll be following your coverage. Happy Easter to you.
Thanks, Ben. Happy Easter to you too, buddy.
Good stuff from James Moran. We got to shut it down briefly, but we'll bounce right back in. Take some of your phone calls on the subject. 706-0111 plus, well, you know what we do. It's Friday. It's the 5 o'clock hour. We got to throw a little bit of shade in. We got some new candidates that are going to come on down and join us. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And luck. going back to our regular show. All right.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. We try to take it one question at a time on the program. Here's what I mean. Every 4 o'clock hour, we give you a sink or swim question of the day. I want to update that. We've got some interesting response, not just the percentages. We've got a good response from the Twitter side of things. I'll get Clint to update Facebook as well. And then we'll dive into a completely different question altogether. But, CD, let's get back to it. Today's sink or swim question, should the Saints trade up in the draft? What do the geniuses on Twitter say?
The geniuses on Twitter, they're leaning towards your perspective. They're saying swim, 78% of them. In fact, at one point, this thing was 100%. Looks like there's some people who are leaning towards my side, a lowly 22% going with sink.
And we'll give some credit to Dustin. His full response, if they are truly going all in this year, they might as well trade our 2020 number one and try to get somewhere in the first round. Now, what do they get with the pick is the real question. Do they go D-line, corner, wide receiver? All fair questions. That's not the reason that I was swimming, though. So my more nuanced response is, yeah, I would love to see them move up to maybe the second round to get another second round pick, or in the third round using some of their back half of the draft assets and maybe a guy that's just a platoon player for them, right? Because if you look at the makeup of their current selections, they've got 2 in the 5th, 1 in the 6th, and 2 in the 7th. So 5 of the Saints' 6 picks that they're currently slated to make are going to come not only on Saturday but later on Saturday, right? They've got the 62nd overall pick, so that's at the end of round 2. I'd love to see them get up again to make a second pick on Friday night, right? The rounds 2 through 3. But the feedback from Dustin there, he said, hey, the hell with it. Put me back up in the first round. Let the big dog eat. Are we trying to win now or not? And there are a lot of people that feel that way. I just wonder, where do you draw the line in the sand in terms of how much of the future you're willing to mortgage? They sort of already have done that to an extent with moving up to get Marcus Davenport, right? They did this last year. Are they willing to do it again? Time will tell. The Saints certainly haven't minded the idea of trading up, not even a little bit. And usually it is into the first round, if we're going to be honest. Did it again with, I'm trying to think, a couple of years back, I think Ryan Ramczyk was one they ended up getting after they dealt Brandon Cooks. So, I don't know. We'll see. The idea of trading up isn't a bad one, but are they going to do it into the first or later? Time will tell. On Facebook, Robert says, no, the Saints should not trade up. They have been riding that way for a few years. Now it is the time to just draft where you are and hit it again next year with a full plethora of picks. You got people on both sides of the divide. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. A couple of takes have been spit. We need another. Ray, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I think the Saints should trade up. That's what I think. Yeah, because they need a little help, more help in wide receiver department.
You know what's interesting, and Ray, I appreciate the call. I'm going to respond to that. Ray thinks they should trade up. I made the observation, I wouldn't mind seeing them get rid of Meredith and then maybe a fifth rounder to get to, like, the third round again. Is that the fair value of a trade like that? I don't know, but I'm just working through it in my mind because I don't see where they're going to get the value out of that cat that came over from Chicago, right? And we already know that they've got their chips all in on Michael Thomas. I would bet they extend him maybe leading into or during this season so they don't have to worry about it after the season. But I think with so many chips into the table on Michael Thomas, on Tre'Quan Smith, I'm just curious about who they can line up after that. Ray said they need to draft that guy. I don't mind that, but I'm just not going to bet that Cam Meredith will be that guy. We all know that they've helped themselves out as far as pass-catching tight ends go with the acquisition of Jared Cook, but Ray thinks they need to move up and get a wide receiver. can't say I wholeheartedly disagree with him. All right, CD, I mentioned that we take it one question at a time, a statement to make, and then we'll get to the next question. Here's the statement. No one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust in their management top down. It starts with Mark. They're going to help you create a vision, and then they'll fulfill it. And here's the beauty of it. When you're out on that newly revamped patio on a weekend like this, on Good Friday, Easter Sunday, you're celebrating with your family, your friends, and they are just jaw to the floor amazed at what you have with your patio. That's the beauty of what they do at Patio Center. And right now, you could do this before the next major holiday. Heck, maybe even before the 4th of July. Let them up your patio game. All it takes to start is a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
John Gruden, Mike Mayock, and the Raiders, come on down. This is hilarious. And if you haven't seen it yet, I'll share the tweet from Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, NFL.com. Midday today, his sources informed him that Raiders coach John Gruden and GM Mike Mayock sent their scouts home for the weekend, and they are not expected to return by draft time. The belief is they don't know who to trust and wanted to clear the room. Can you imagine being part of an NFL franchise, and this is one of the most important times of year you have, something that could set your franchise up for success short-term and a decade into the future, and you send your scouts home for the weekend, and you know what? Maybe you just don't even come back. We'll let you know if we want you for the NFL draft. The height of paranoia. And I'm not saying it's the right call or the wrong call. I'm not in that room either. So they didn't have to send me home. I don't know how bad it is. All I know is that it's a horrible look. And a guy that hasn't been an NFL coach in a decade is showing a little bit of his backside. A guy that's never been a GM. Not saying he can't do it. In fact, I told you about a week or two ago, you better give him a chance because he's sharp. But it's not a good look for a retread coach and a never has been GM. They're kicking everyone else out, and you know what? We'll take it from here. At some rate, it looks like they're just summoning the ghost of Al Davis. So good luck and God bless to the Raiders. They can't get to Vegas soon enough. They need to roll the dice on something because this is getting awfully weird.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
I had designs on including Kevin Durant within that, but I'll mention on our way out here, pretty funny stuff. You've seen the audio, seen the video that includes audio, obviously, but Kevin Durant looking at media members when asked about whether or not Patrick Beverley can guard him or things he has to do to score, things he has to do to facilitate and help the team, and he said, I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. And then he looks at another reporter. Y'all know who I am, right? Absolutely hilarious. All right, we got to hit our break. When we return, Blaine Viator going to sit in. We'll explore LSU baseball, maybe a little Saints draft, and briefly look ahead to football season next year, prep style in Acadiana. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out, having fun, and watching a great crowd trickle in to Ruffino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Here we go, back in to Ruffino's on the River. You're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, and this might be one of the few days of the year where my show is not appropriately named. Ben Love, and I'm joined by Blaine Viator. Good Friday, man. Everyone's off work and school, except for me. But still, not a lot of traffic out there. This has been downright pleasant today.
Today's just been an excellent day, man. We're at Rufino's on the river. It's beautiful out here. We're sitting, you know, right next to the river. Sunshine out, man. It's just great to be out here. No traffic getting over here. No anybody else working today? I don't think so.
So this
a lot of crawfish balls to go to, right?
It's our third B2BS run from Rufino's on the river. So far, the people that have sat in your chair, Trev Falk, Kevin Falk, Billy Napier, and then the assistant, the deputy athletic director, Nico Yanko from UL. So
yeah, I'm not in the class of any of those guys for sure.
Just rarefied air, and you're right there with them. Hey, one thing you do possess, a wealth of knowledge. I wanted to leave with LSU and Astros baseball, maybe a little Saints of the draft. We'll get to that. But you brought it to my attention. There's more than just the Jaden Navarre decommitment. So let's briefly talk a little LSU football recruiting. Again, those just joining us, those that need a refresher. Four-star California outside linebacker Jaden Navarre committed, I believe, the day after LSU's spring game. He flipped to Oregon. That's not great news, but there's even more good news that is coming for LSU recruiting.
Well, I think that decommitment caught everybody by surprise, even folks out in California. He seemed like a kid who just loved LSU from the onset, that everybody thought he'd stick. You know, he came down with a bunch of family, his uncle, his father, and a couple others, and committed after the spring game. He told the coaching staff that he was going to go ahead and visit Oregon. He already had airfare purchased and hotels booked, so he was going to take that trip over there to Eugene. And he caught a lot of folks by surprise, went ahead and committed. But LSU wasted no time in replacing the outside linebacker athlete commit. Today they were able to add a linebacker commit in Josh White out of Side Creek in Houston, Texas. He's a four-star prospect in himself. He goes 6'1", 200 pounds. He ranks about 269 nationally in the 247 composite. He's not the same type of player maybe that you saw Navarre, who's a freak of an athlete, big, tall guy that can really cover sideline to sideline. But I really think Josh White's an excellent athlete in his own right. He has the good body frame. He may be able to move inside a little bit, 6'1", not 6'5", right? So he's not that guy that could come after the edge and get after the quarterback, but a good linebacker in his own right.
Give me the school again out of the Houston area.
He's from Side Creek.
Was Russell Shepard was Cy Fair, I think?
Yeah, Cy Fair. I think they got a couple Cy's out there.
That Cypress area, kind of north of Houston, whole lot of talent. That's something that has transpired within the last hour. So lose an OLB, gain an OLB, but if you read between the lines, you think there's a chance that within the next 24 hours, they've got another boom in the 2020 class.
I think the Easter weekend is going to be very good for the LSU Tigers on the gridiron. Jermaine Burton, a wide receiver. Coincidentally, he's from California as well, Ben. He goes 6'1", 193 pounds. He's from Calabasas out in California. He ranks 35 nationally on the 247 composite. He's a wide receiver. He's a freak. Could play in the slot. Got good moves, quick burst. Kind of guy that could, like I like to say, dance in a phone booth, you know, make guys miss. He's a big-time prospect. And if all goes as planned, I expect him to commit to LSU tomorrow. He's going to commit on 420. It's his mentor's birthday. He's going to make a big
sell. Come on now.
He's going to, you know, make a big a presentation. And everybody expects him, you know, all the experts expect him to pick LSU tomorrow on 420.
Remind me the name of the top flight five-star corner from Cali that's committed to LSU.
Elias Ricks.
Elias Ricks. Thank you. So the combination of that young man you mentioned, a receiver, Elias Ricks, they've already been in it for Jaden Navarre. Let me connect the dot here. I told you that Kevin Falk sat in that chair last Friday. One of the things he said, more off-air than on, he said it's amazing, the relationships that Ed, Tommy Robinson, and some of these guys have in California. And with USC and UCLA down, they are pouncing in this class.
Yeah, he shared those same things with me as well. He told me that, you know, this class, they recognize that this might not be the best year in state in Louisiana, so they're going to go and get the best guys that fit the program, and they're going to go out of state, and they're not afraid to push the boundaries, you know, going all the way out to California and capitalizing on those relationships that were already built when USC, you know, when Ed Ogeron and company were at USC, Tommy Robinson and on. But Kevin seems to be excited about this class, what he shared with me. And speaking about Elias Ricks, there was some buzz that came out earlier this
week. USC?
Yeah, you know, maybe trying to reclassify, go to USC. But I heard that, you know, there's nothing to worry about, that his parents are in process of purchasing a home in Baton Rouge. The move might take place possibly, you know, before the season or in January. So
wow.
He's going to end up in Baton Rouge.
Let's switch topics. Ben Love joined by Blaine Viator. We're live from Rufino's on the River. We'll take a call, if you dare, 706-0111. I want to go in on baseball, then we'll get to the Saints in the draft on the other side of the break. And we'll start LSU. We've actually got some news in the last 10 minutes. An LSU spokesman divulged to James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine that Brock Mathis will not play tonight. He's having his hand evaluated. Sal Garza is going to handle the catching duties. How does that change things for LSU going up against Florida?
Well, I think Mathis has been pretty good behind the plate all season long. He has had a little bit of trouble throwing out base runners. He was able to throw out a gator last night, but his bat hadn't been that consistent. Sal Garza, since he came to LSU, you know, everybody had a lot of potential for a big pop, a lot of power in the bat. We haven't seen that. He seems like a guy who's been struggling to hit off-speed pitches and breaking pitches. Last night, he absolutely crushed one when the game was well in hand to right center field, though. And so he was able to flash a little bit of that power. Maybe that could give him a little bit of confidence. I do think they lose a little bit of defense, though. He's a guy who battled injuries when he first got to LSU. That's why he was in that DH role, wasn't able to, you know, field the catching position. But since he's healthy now, he's been able to practice a little bit and give him a little bit from the catcher's position. Maybe not so much in game time, you know, very, very limited action there. So I do think they lose something behind the plate. I'm not sure it really matters, though, at the plate as far as swinging the bat. I think it's about wishy-washy the way Mathis has been kind of struggling a little bit, especially recently. Maybe Garza could come in and knock one out of the park.
We'll go to Astros baseball. They had a double-digit game win streak. They lose the last one in Oakland. Not a lot of shame in that. It happens. But now they've got Texas. And I'll get you to reflect just big picture at the paradigm shift in that rivalry. And you went from big brother to little brother and just completely flipped it on its head. So as we come into this weekend set at Arlington, just how much of a gap is there now between the Astros and then way down the ladder, the Rangers?
Well, I think the Rangers are playing a lot better than people expected them at the beginning of the season. But they were able to take 2 out of 3 against the Astros earlier this year. So I think this is a good statement weekend for the Astros to go back and assert their dominance back on, because they've just absolutely crushed that rivalry in the last couple of years. It's been interesting, though. I mean, the Rangers seemed like they were on the cusp of winning a championship for 2 or 3 years in a row. Then they just fell off the face of the earth. You know, they battled injuries. Guys got older. They're nowhere in the mix right now. And I think they're playing better. But if you look at that roster, I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think that's a team that's going to come in and contend for the entire season. I think it's a good opportunity for the Astros to go in there, maybe flex their muscles a little bit and say, hey, we still own you.
I've got lingering concerns about some of the starting pitching after the top two. And look, there's news that's flashing across the ticker right now. You got to be happy when your top one, your top two are healthy. Jacob DeGrom for the Mets, it was said that he had what going on?
Yeah, I told you. I said, man, I was worried I was going to miss a start in fantasy from Jason DeGrom. They said he had strep throat.
Strep throat.
So they were going to push him back a day. No big deal. No worries. No
and problem. Now he's going to have an MRI on his freaking elbow, right? So the old strep throat that turns into an elbow MRI.
I mean,
so if you guys are healthy, you got to be happy that Verlander and Cole are rolling.
Yeah, you know, reach over and knock on whatever piece of wood is near you. JV and Garrett Cole have been very good this year. You know, they come in there and they're able to control ball games.
But what about after?
After that, it gets a little bit dicey. You know, a lot of folks like that Wade Miley pickup, you know, the beginning, you know, prior to the season, but he's just not a guy who got me a whole lot excited. You know, Colin McHugh's giving you what he can, right?
I love Colin McHugh. I just think he's being miscast right now.
I think he's a better long relief guy, right? I mean,
he was an all-star doing it last year.
Yeah, Brad Peacock's a guy who's played that role too for you in the past. But I mean, I think they're going to be a team that's going to want to make a move, but prior to the deadline, look, guy like Dallas Keuchel still out there unsigned.
I know.
Then rumors came out yesterday, late last night and early today, that he might be interested in a one-year deal. So maybe he'll finally listen to the Astros. You know, Scott Boras is his agent. He's going to want big money. I don't know if there's
here's my only
willing
issue,
to pay that, though.
And I'm with you, though. I would love the idea of Keuchel. Here's my only issue with the guys after the top two. The Astros in that position are doing things that they have to do to get by, not things that they want to because they have the luxury of. Every other position on the field, in the bullpen, they are doing what they want to do, and they got luxury out the ass. I don't know any other way to play that.
And diversity, right?
Yes.
They got guys that play multiple positions. They can swap Diaz, Yuli Gurriel. Bregman plays multiple positions. In the outfield, they got 5 guys that can go any one of the 3 positions.
They lost Marwin Gonzalez and are still that versatile.
I mean, you know, you had a guy like Michael Brantley that just comes in, he plays a number of positions, and you had, you know, guys like Josh Reddick and Tony Kemp. You know, you're so diverse everywhere else. But that pitching staff and that front end, especially, you know, once you get past Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander, it's dicey. But they've seemed to be able to piece it together, you know. And there's been different trends in the Major League Baseball recently, too. Look, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, who are, what, one of the best teams of baseball at
openers.
This current moment, they pitch openers, and, yeah. and they're able to do that kind of thing. You know, A.J. Hinch has been a guy who likes to try different things and experiment a little bit. So it'll be interesting what happens, but I really think they need to go out and sign one more marquee guy on that front end of the pitching stuff.
The more Astros that I listen to, because honestly, that's usually the way that I'm able to consume them on our station, just driving around
town.
Not
this weekend, you can watch.
That's true. No, that's true. But for the most part, when I'm listening, the one guy that I've come to appreciate that I didn't when they first picked him up from Minnesota, Ryan Pressly, is a stud. And in the modern day landscape, if you don't have an eighth and a ninth inning guy, technically if you don't have a seventh, eighth, and ninth, especially come playoffs, you're just in a hole. They got that guy.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I really think that they were kind of missing that last year. Look, as soon as it comes in, he's going to shut it down. Completely trust him on the back end. Last year, we weren't sure. Didn't know who you trust in the back end. Not only do you have him this year, like you just mentioned, you got guys in between. And Peacock's been another guy that you could, you know, kind of – put, you know, a chip on the table for, and I really think that the back end's solidified. It's great, as you mentioned. Only the starting, you know, rotation, and I don't know if Wade Miley's going to be a guy I ever fully trust.
I understand. It's also not 2008 anymore. He's not with the Arizona Diamondbacks. It's a little different. He's a little older. We're going to take our final break of the hour. When we return, let's revisit a question we asked in the 4 o'clock hour. We had a caller, Ray. He gave his 2 cents. I'll let Blaine share his next. Should the Saints trade up in the NFL draft next week? Bumper to Bumper Sports coming back out to Ruffino's on the River. And a really nice bar scene. Got some folks out here. Come out and join us if you can. And on your way, keep it locked in to 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Here we go. Right back at it. Final time in the 5 o'clock hour. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're hanging out at Ruffino's on the River. Come find us in the bar area and keep listening on your way to 103.7 The Game. They've got the Angry Calamari. Seen a few people break out the pizza already, martinis, beer, whatever you need. People are celebrating life. And right now we're celebrating a little time with Blaine Viator. All right, the Saints, and you're looking at their draft picks right now that they currently have. 62nd overall is their first, and that's a second rounder. And then after that, they've got 5 total picks, rounds 5 through 7. The question of the day, should they trade up?
Absolutely they should, right? Aren't they all in this season, Ben? When you all in, you got to go and get what you need, whether that be you solidify the offensive line, get one of those deep threats or just a game breaker at the wide receiver position, or add to your defensive backfield. You know, they need safeties, cornerbacks. Those guys don't grow on trees. Go out and get somebody that's going to make a difference this season so you can win a championship. The problem is, though, if all goes to plan, the Saints wouldn't draft into the back half of the first round next year. So if you're going to start moving picks from next year's draft, who's going to be interested in something that
could be
one
the 31st overall
that
pick?
Would be the 31 or 30th pick overall. So you might have to package a couple things together. And I'm totally okay with selling a bunch of these picks right here, just going wholesale and trying to get up into the first round and get somebody that's going to make a difference.
And I'm going to tell you why I like the idea of bundling, whatever, all these later round picks up. It's not just the lack of a likelihood that you hit on that player. It's that you don't have that much roster space available. We saw decent players, like the guy, was it Leonard's out of Florida State, the old lineman last year, the Terrell Jamerson, the DB out of Wisconsin. Decent players didn't stick because you don't have much roster space. If you're not picking up studs, what are you doing at this point?
Well, look, you've seen it last year where they had to get rid of guys. I mean, it happens when you're stacked like they are. So I think you got to go out and get somebody that you know is going to make a difference. I'm not saying he has to be a day one starter, but he damn well be a contributor.
Yeah.
If you're going to go out and get him and he contribute early on. So this is the year. They're acting like it is. The window's been closing. They've been pushing it back every year. This got to be the year. You got to go in and bust that sucker out and go ahead and get the guy that you know is going to make a difference and take you to the next level.
Before you came on, I did tease the audience a little bit. I said that we were going to talk some very, very preliminary Acadiana area prep football for next year. So Do you have any reason to believe, let's just start broad strokes here, is there any reason for you to believe that some of the teams that were really, really, really good last year won't be really, really, really good this year? Notre Dame, St. Thomas More, we got to throw in Eunice, who won a state championship last year, LCA.
Out of those teams you just mentioned, I expect to fall off a little bit from Eunice. It was a senior-laden team. A bunch of guys come through, and they might fall off a little bit. They have a rich tradition, so there's no reason to think that they're going to miss the playoffs or anything. But, look, LCA might be every bit as good as they were this year. The record might not show that. The record might show that they lose a couple more games because the competition's going to step up. They're moving up to a difficult 2A district. They're adding Acadiana, Evangel onto the schedule. So they might drop a couple, maybe three games in the regular season, but that's going to be a team that's going to be battle-tested and ready to win a state championship against a district rival like Notre Dame.
I wonder what's going to happen with the guy that I consider a friend of the program in Trev Falk. And I don't bring that up to pass judgment on what the LHSAA has done so far. I do know this. It was Country Day of Metairie and LCA that were popped for this. My understanding is that about a week or two ago, Country Day was sort of let off the hook and that LCA's hearing is upcoming. So having no inside information, I'm just curious how that part plays out. Trev is a huge part of what they do, obviously.
He sure does, and he has an excellent coaching staff around him. Jordan Carmouche is his two coordinators, and they're both excellent coaches. Look, Barry Baldwin, the athletic director there, along with Pastor Jay, is always going to set this program up for success. So I'm not saying that they're going to get off completely, but I think this will probably end and they'll figure a way around it. Trev is a dynamic coach. He has a ton of experience, and he's such a good guy too.
Yes.
I hate to see that happen to him. I'm hoping that they can put this behind him and get back to the action on the football field.
So those powers from last year, we expect by and large to be powers again. I think there are some teams that are going to take a step forward. We don't have a ton of time and I hate that, but I think there's a chance that Karen Crow is a lot better this year. I think there's a really good chance that Acadiana remains toward the upper crust again.
Acadiana's going to be something to reckon with this year. I mean, they only lose, I believe, two starters off that defense and another two off that offense. So, look, Acadiana's going to take a major step forward. Their schedule's pretty tough,
Love their head coach.
They open Karen Crow week one,
yes,
I believe
that's
it is.
That's the opener this year.
They open Karen Crow week one, and I believe they play LCA week two or three. So, look, the competition's going
to
be there.
Coach McCullough's impressed me, and I wish we had another half hour to wax on that. But that program has been a lot of places special. They're going to keep going to those type of places, in my opinion. But there's some other schools from around the area that probably deserve love in a conversation like this. I will say this. In December, we could be talking about some of these games being played at Cajun Field. We could be talking about these games being played at Cougar Field. And who knows, right? But that part of this equation, to me, it's going to get very interesting.
And I think it's a disservice to the kids, man. I mean, kids in Louisiana.
Disagree, but
anyway. Well, I mean, kids in the state grew up wanting to play inside the Superdome, and now you're going to maybe take that opportunity away from them. So, look, kids want to play in front of their home fans, but they want to play inside that venue more than anything, I would think.
I am hashtag Team Boyer on this one.
Oh,
I know exactly what Mike is doing here, and I'm on board because ultimately you got to put a gun to somebody's head to get what you need. Blaine, thanks for doing this.
No problem, man. A lot of fun.
I'll catch you here in a little while.
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll come right back in. Mike Dettillier, Q&A replay on the NFL Draft and the Saints. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Ruffino's on the River on 103.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll. Hour 3 of 3 underway. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love live from Ruffino's on the River on 1037 The Game. And in a very short period of time, maybe 2 minutes, we're going to send you Q&A replay with Mike Dettillier. Great interview from RP3 this morning. Get you ready for the NFL draft. Get you ready for the Saints. Their lot in life. Should they trade up? We've been discussing it all show long. But I got to take a moment now to thank a couple guys who've come out You guys have been out to the tap room a number of times before. Brian, you called your shot Babe Ruth style on Facebook. You said, I'm coming out. I'll see you guys soon. You been having fun today?
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
All right, so I'll ask you this one quick question. We'll get you out of here on this. The Saints, they're all in. They've been saying that. Would you like to see them trade up and maybe go get another one of those first, second-round type players and just to hell with the future, we want to win now? Is that how you feel about it?
I'd say absolutely. Drew Brees has a short time left, maybe a couple more seasons. So I'd say, yeah, let's go all in right now while we can, 100%.
All right, do me one favor. Save a seat at the bar so I can go all in about 25 minutes here.
Absolutely, Ben. Absolutely.
Brian, you're the man.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
You got to introduce your friend and bring him on now. He's our guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joe comes out a lot. I got to tell you, you guys were there the night that I had the bachelor party, right, at the Taproom River Ranch. We're good enough to send my wife and I off in style. So, Joe, we bring you on now, and we are.
Penn State.
I knew you'd say that. Okay, and you told me something I didn't even know at the bar earlier, that the Nittany Lions have had a quarterback enter the transfer portal. Tell our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. We you know, you got a fifth-year senior. He's been waiting his turn behind Trace McSorley. You're hoping it's going to be a fairy tale, kind of a Michael Robinson type 2005. But he had some injuries. He couldn't get on the field in the spring. And now here we are, and he's battling with his sophomore stud, Sean Clifford. And, he had some talks with his family, and he's like, I don't know if I'm going to get my shot. I might lose this job. I got one more shot at the NFL. And so he decided to get in the transfer portal. So I hate to see that for him, but wish him the best of luck.
And so we'll see. I think LSU's got its guy in Joe Burrow, maybe the Cajun, somebody else locally, or maybe not. Maybe he ends up taking his name out of it. But as you said off air, and I think it's a good point, it's kind of harder for the quarterbacks to walk that back, isn't it, once they put their name in the portal?
Yeah, and you're looking for senior leadership and owning that locker room, and you put your name out there potentially leaving. How do you come back and get that team back together? So, and from a selfish standpoint as a fan, you know, if you're going to start the Sean Clifford era, let's start it now in the sophomore year, kind of Trace McSorley-ish, get 3 years of that.
Not a lot of people. Put the headset on. I appreciate both of you guys. Thanks for coming out. I'm going to catch up with y'all here in a moment. Fun stuff. Had to get a little interaction to begin hour number three. But right about now, well, let's send you to the expert. It's not me. Heck, it's not even RP3. It's Mike Dettillier.
The draft is less than a week away now. And I just wanted to kind of touch base with you on some things that I saw going on for the draft. And we'll talk about the Saints. We'll talk about LSU. But let's start off with the Tigers. They have two guys that look to be locks for the first round. Devin White, for sure. You have him graded extremely high, the number one inside backer in your draft report. Greedy Williams is also, you gave a first round grade, the highest cornerback on the board. But I'm going to ask you, Mike, I've seen in the last couple weeks that some people have him as a mid round first round pick. Some people have him going in the second. Why the fluctuation on a guy that's so talented?
Well, you know, it's that time of year. Everybody's got different opinions on a player.
Right.
So you're going to get that about a lot of guys from 20 to 35 today, to be honest. But, you know, watching Greedy, you know, it didn't take me 2 years like some of the national guys to figure out he's not a good tackler. I mean, I can see that from game one. It's not his forte, and he knows it. I've talked to him about it, and he's told me I want to get better in that area. I need to get stronger. I need to do a better job as a wrap-up tackler. But on the other hand, you take a look at his size, his great length. He's got something I can't teach, and that's ball skills. As a coach, you can't teach that. Either you have it or you don't. And he finds the ball real quickly in flight. He's got tremendous foot speed. And, again, you look where he played. It's a school that's produced a lot of defensive backs. So, everybody's trying to promote their own guy. And I hate to bang the drum on this, but, listen, there's a lot of agents that get into the ear of some of these national guys. Because they try to get in mind. But, you know, I've been married for over 30 years, so I know how that is. You can sort of tune that out after a while. But that's part of it. That's part of what you see a lot of times from national guys that, oh, listen, I got DeAndre Baker. Let me tell you how good he is. And Byron Murphy, let me tell you how good he is. Rakan Singh, let me tell you how good. So, you know, after you hear it enough times, you start believing it yourself. And you got to believe what your eyes tell you. And from a matchup standpoint, Greedy's got all the skills you're looking for as a cover corner. Everybody's got a flaw, you know, no matter what. And for Greedy, it's certainly in the run support area of the game. But, man, he's special talent as far as a cover guy, because in this league full of huge wideouts, he matches up well downfield. And that's a big key for me. When you see all these king-size receivers hitting the NFL left and right, you better be able to match up. And Greedy can do that very well. And he's got a little bit of athletic arrogance to him, and I like that. That he really doesn't think anybody's going to beat him. And if they do, well, you know what? I'll come back the next time, and I'll make you pay the price.
We're on with Mike Dettelier. He is the man behind the Mike Dettelier's Draft Report, one of the most respected draft guides in the business. He's also the college and pro football analyst for WWL Radio. Mike, tell me a little bit about Foster Moreau. You have him as the eighth best tight end in this class. You grade him as a second to third round guy. This is a guy that's increased his draft stock every step of the way, right? From the Reese's Senior Bowl to the Combine to the Pro Day. He's done everything right along the way to increase his draft stock. What are some of the things that he really brings to the table that NFL teams are going to like?
Well, he's helped his draft stock, actually, from the start of his senior season all the way through. We all knew Foster could block because, you know, that's why they brought him in. He's got a great story. His mom was a terrific volleyball player at Tulane. He almost went there. He had a verbal commitment to go to Tulane, and then at the last minute, LSU had a scholarship opening, and he ended up, you know, going to LSU instead. Great size guy. He's a big man. When Les recruited him, you know, those tight ends are blockers, like another tackle. And that didn't change a lot. The last 2 years, he's caught 46 passes at LSU, which is solid. But that's not what he was used a lot at. And you looked at LSU's tackles, you needed some help. Because Joe Burrow's got the best aerial views of stadiums across the Southeast. And so they kept Foster in a lot to help out as a blocker. But he's real competent as a receiver. He's a big target. I think in the NFL, short yardage, red zone, he's going to be a really good player. And what I see today, this is one of the better tight end classes I've ever done. It would rival, and I've done this 33 years, so it would rival most of the top classes. But today's spread offense, you rarely see a tight end used as a blocker, as an inline blocker. They're flanked out like a receiver. That's not the case with Foster. So he brings that element to the table with you. He worked out with a track coach, and it really helped him out. His flexibility is he was a fast player before, but, you know, it helped him out to better that part of the game with him. And so I think he's a guy third round, maybe very early fourth, but I think third round for him is going to be where he gets selected at. And just you talk about a competitor. He got the ultimate compliment. You know, Coach and I, we've known each other now over 40 years. Both grew up on the Bayou, went to different schools, but both grew up on the Bayou. And I asked him one time, we did a Tiger tour together, and I said, you know, what about Foster? And he said, Mike, let me tell you, if you all wouldn't know no better, I'd swear he's from the Bayou, man. He's tough. That Jesuit stuff, he's tough. And that's the ultimate compliment from Ogeron, when you get a tough comment come from him. And so I think he's a guy that's really went from a late-round pick to start the season to a middle-round pick. And that's a pretty big jump. But, you know, the accumulation of his work. Also, too, when things started to spiral for LSU in the summer, a lot of quarterback controversy, players getting in trouble, suspensions, that sort of thing, Foster was one of the guys in the locker room that kind of took control and said, wait a minute, you know, all this stuff ain't affecting us. You know, we're going to go out and take care of business. And whatever happens with somebody, you know, hey, look, that's your personal deal, but it's not going to affect this locker room. And he sort of took control of it, along with Devin. And I got a lot of respect for a guy, because you know what? A lot of people talk about leadership but don't do a damn thing about it. And he was a guy that did something about it. He called that team meeting in, and he got those guys to say, hey, listen, we can't do anything about what's happening off the field. Well, we can take care of business on the field.
Mike, I want to ask you about the Saints. Obviously, they do not have a first-round pick, but Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland are known to be wheeling and dealing. They do have the second-round pick, and then, again, they have a lot of late-round guys, fifth and sixth round. Let me ask you this to start off with. Do you believe that they're going to stay pat where they're at, or do you think they're going to move around either by trading someone like Andres Pete or trading future picks to get back into maybe the first round or another second round pick this year?
Well, I can read a racing form. I just go back to a few years back. Sean Payton wanted Mark Ingram, and they traded up in the round one to get him. He wanted Brandon Cooks. They traded up in round one to get him. He wanted David Onyemata. They traded up in the fourth round to get him. He fell head over heels for Alvin Kamara, and he traded up in the third round to get him. Last year, he wanted Marcus Davenport, traded up in round one to get him. So, you know, if I'm going to the track and I look at that, I would say they ain't going to stay pat. It's just a part of a pattern. And you know, I think early on, especially, you know, and Sean's admitted this, hey, you know, the top 110 players, you know, I know them really well. It's the guys beyond there. I got to rely on my scouts and scouting department to give me the best information there. But early on, Sean's always sort of fallen in love with a player or two. And I sort of have the feeling the same thing will happen this year. And it may not be going into round one back again, but it could well be that that's a long stretch not having a third or fourth round pick that, you know, he decides to deal off a future pick to move up to get a selection either in round three or round four. So, yeah, I think he's going to be aggressive in doing so. And then, you know, for the Saints, then they got to fall back into a spot where your scouting department's got to take over. Because once you get past the third round, that's where your scouting department and your regional scouts play such a huge part in this. And, you know, Sean always has a comment, and he's told me this, that, you know, I tell my scouts, you know, don't go tell anybody else when this is all over with, you know, I beat the table for a guy. You tell me first. Tell me now. If you want this player and you think he'd be a good fit with us, and, you know, if you're wrong, you're wrong. But, you know, don't go tell, you know, the media people afterwards, you know, I lobbied for this guy, but, you know, you didn't want him. So I think he's much better listening to the scouts today than maybe before. And you got to rely on those guys because they've seen him, you know, for, you know, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. Today you rarely get a four-year guy, but it's part of the game today that you've got to have some trust. And the other part is, and he sort of emphasizes this, that you got to have a vision of how you're going to use that player offensively, defensively, or on special teams. And they've done a much better job, I think, throughout the years in finding out a little bit more about the mental makeup of a player, of the more focused player and somebody that football matters to them. Most of us can see if a guy's got talent or not. It's the intangible part of the game, how much you want to work at it, how coachable you are, that sort of thing. So I think Jeff has brought in a buffer there where if he sees a player and maybe, you know, there's some division there. Because, you know, you put 10 scouts in a room, you're going to get 10 different opinions. You throw in a coach, then that's 14 different opinions from 11 guys. Because the coach, he's all over the board. I live next to a former NFL coach. And he's told me before, coaches are the worst talent evaluators in the world. And he was one of them. Believe me, he was one of them. Because he thought he could coach anybody. So you fall into that. But I do think that they're going to be aggressive. It's been part of the makeup of this football team over the last 5 or 6, 7 years, where it's not the George Allen philosophy of the future is now, but it's got some of the remnants of that, understanding that the only championship you can play for is the one you're playing for this year. Man, you know, who wants to hear about 2021 or 2022? Man, listen, I'm worried about that today, and you got a 40-year-old quarterback. So I think that does come into play with Sean. He's worried about winning now. And as he gets up in age, the one thing I find with him is, and he's always sort of said, yeah, I don't know if I'll be a lifer in this business. I think he's more worried about winning now than ever before. And I think that's just getting older as a coach.
Mike, appreciate you taking some time out for us, as always, brother. Enjoy the draft. I know this is a great time of year for you, and enjoy your Easter weekend.
Thanks so much, guys. Y'all take care. Happy Easter to everyone.
There you have it. First aired this morning, and, well, it's now going full circle on a Good Friday. Our thanks to RP3 and Mike Dettillier for letting us borrow it. Final break of the show. We'll be right back out to Ruffino's on the River. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in. And all right, Clint, we got another opportunity, another submission, world's shortest radio segment. We're ready to submit, and that's because, well, Mike D, my guy, can go. Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 103.7 The Game. We have had a blast at Ruffino's on the River. Again, I got to thank Ruff and Rodrigue, everybody here, Chris, Greg, the managers, for making it happen. And so far, this is our best bar crowd yet. Who would have thunk it on a Good Friday? Just know that every Friday moving forward, you'll have the opportunity to join us. And hey, you come out a lot like our guys, Brian and Joe. We might just put you on the air. We might talk a little shop with you. In fact, I'm thinking about carving out a segment where that's exactly what we do every single week. So it's been a lot of fun here. People are enjoying themselves. If you can't make it today, that's all right. Come back tomorrow evening for dinner, or come back next Friday and check out a live show, B2BS at Ruffino's on the River. They've always got great appetizers that are specially made for our listeners. It's been Angry Calamari the last 2 weeks. They've also been doing some half-off wine by the glass in the bar area for the duration of my show. I have no reason to believe that that will not continue. So far, we're off to a running start with the broadcast at Ruffino's on the River. Just want to make sure you're a part of them as we move forward. Pretty busy show today. I know we didn't connect with our guy Ruff and Rodrigue. That's okay. He's doing the Easter thing with his family. We did have an opportunity to connect with James Moran, the on-deck circle, previewing LSU Florida baseball. It was a live hit from Alec Box Stadium. Blaine Viator with us from 5:30 to 6. If you missed any or all of those interviews, I highly encourage you check them out. Go to 1037thegame.com or the free mobile app. Either way, just click or tap on demand, and you'll get sectioned out interviews or an entire replay of today's B2BS show. A lot of fun so far, and you will have LSU Florida game 2. Tigers right now 24-15 overall, 9-7 in the SEC. If they can come out of the next 48 hours with 2 wins, all will be forgiven and forgotten from yesterday. If they can't, the conversation will take a little different direction, right? I'm not rooting for that. I'm just telling you the reality. If I'm doing a show Monday, And LSU is what? 11-8 in the conference, I guess, at that point they would be. Now that math doesn't work. If they're 10-8 in the conference, there we go. Then suddenly you're going to have a harder time getting to 20 overall wins. And that's usually the line in the sand of whether or not you can be a national seed and expect to host a super regional. So a lot on the line. LSU Florida baseball coming up. 7 o'clock is first pitch. Clint and I are about to drop you off in the capable hands and voices of Chris Blair and Doug Thompson. Your pregame show coming up at 6:30. I want to thank Clint, everybody, for listening, calling in, especially all of our listeners who are out here having a great time at Rufino's on the River. This is pretty cool stuff. The power of YP, you people out there in listener land doing your thing. Enjoy your weekend. Have a safe and family-filled Easter. We'll catch you on Monday. B2BS will be back at 4. For Clint, I'm Ben, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.